Morning, everyone. It's 10 a.m., 11th of December. So nice to have you along for our webinar for the next 60 minutes. This is the final webinar of 2025, and we're going to finish on a high with the headlines from our largest student survey, which we've called Spark. We ran this for the first time last year, so we'll be covering some of the comparisons with the results from last year as well. So next slide, please, Karima. First of all, for those who don't know me, my name's Dan Hawes. I'm co-founder of DRN, Graduate Recruiters Network. And I'm joined by Karima Kiat, who's the marketing manager at the GRB Group. If you can turn your camera on and your mic off, that'd be great. We decided to coincide this meeting with Christmas Jumper Day. So if anyone is partaking, I can see a few of you got some nice Christmas jumpers on there. That's great. So if you are happy to do that, please turn your camera on. We do have some questions that members have already sent us in anticipation of this webinar. So we'll go through those at the end. But if you do have any other questions throughout the presentation, just use the chat. And I'll keep an eye on those for the Q&A section. The presentation will take about 20, 25 minutes, and it is recorded. So if you have to duck out or you would like to share it with your team or listen back on demand, we will send it to you within 48 hours. Okay, next slide, please. So we've got a nice mix of members today. Over 100 were interested in attending. Some big companies, some of the largest recruiters in the UK, like Teach First or the British Army. But also we have some other organisations who are fast growing SMEs. Maybe they're recruiting for the very first time. So a nice mixture of different sizes of companies from all over the UK, and a nice blend of sectors are represented here today. So welcome to everyone. GRN is an invitation-only peer-to-peer community of early talent, early careers, emerging talent, professionals, so you're in the right place. It was launched quite a while ago in 2009. We've slowly built up our membership on LinkedIn. We have over 3,500 early talent professionals within the group, but we also have 282 official members. So they might be Discovery members or on our VIP member plan. So throughout the year, we run webinars like this, where we invite you to come along, hear from practitioners, thought leaders, researchers, that kind of thing. We also manage the LinkedIn group. There's a lot of active conversations on there about various topics throughout the year. Plus, we have a very active WhatsApp group. I think there's about 150 members on there. And during each week, no doubt there'll be some conversations about things that are cropping up that people need a second opinion on. So we have a very active WhatsApp group too. We also like to get out and meet you in person wherever possible. So we've just had our winter social a couple of weeks ago in London. We had some members come along to that, which is brilliant. And also for this year, we started a peer circle. So this is designed for a maximum of 20 members. And we sit in a round table style event and we discuss front of mind topics for an hour. So we run those every quarter. And also we run surveys like this. Over to you, Karima.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Yeah, and thank you, everyone, for being here with us today as well. We've got some really great insights for you today that you can actually realistically use in your own strategies for your business. So just to note, this is just a high level run through of the findings. So then we'll go through more of a deeper dive in the full report. We'll go into a little bit more detail later in this webinar. So just before we get into the data, we just have to acknowledge what a dramatic year it's been for graduates. So headlines have been dominated by talk of AI replacing traditional routes of recruitment, graduate salaries being squeezed, and the impact of the latest budget. So one of the biggest stories was a change to the graduate repayment thresholds, which has effectively left graduates about £24,500 worse off across the repayment period. So that means money is now a real pressure point in a way that we haven't really seen in years. So entry-level positions are now being replaced by AI by some companies, making it harder for graduates to actually get their foot in the door as well. And we've also seen some uncertainty in specific sectors and a rise in redundancy announcements, which has really been shaping how students view job security this year. And so all of that, all of these headlines, they create a backdrop where, you know, graduates are more anxious about future stability. And it really shows up in the data this year. So the context really matters because, you know, students students' priorities are reacting to what's happening around them, not just within recruitment. So because of all the barriers they face, we must, as graduate employers, we have to try and make it as stress-free and as easy as possible for them, which is why we've conducted this survey, was to find out more about their side of the story and get an accurate picture of what we can do to improve their transition from university into work. The survey ran from February to October 2025, and we successfully collected 1,000 responses. So the respondents are students who we at the GRB group have been supporting over the phone since the early stages of their degrees. So they're genuine job seekers who we've been speaking to throughout their university journey. And rest assured, these are real students. There aren't any bots involved. So they're real opinions. So we know that we're not the only big student survey out there, but we do all have differences. So along with high flyers, graduate outcomes, and what graduates do, our survey is slightly different in a way that we're not just a job board. So we are real people who have spoken to these real students directly. And our consultants have long-standing relationships with each of them. And we also visit around 40 universities each year, giving us the opportunity to understand who these students are face-to-face year on year. So it really puts us in a unique position for this survey. But what can you as employers gain from these insights? So behaviors have shifted, timelines have shifted, and their priorities have shifted. So it means your strategy needs to shift with that. So the report will allow you to understand how you can improve your targeting, which will then lead to better conversions, fewer dropouts, and then just an overall stronger employer brand. And these points can only happen when we respond to the reality that these students are living in now. So not just the reality that we remember from a few years ago. So let's just take a look at who they are specifically. So on this slide, we're giving you just a quick picture of who actually took part in this year's Spark survey. So on the left, you can see that we collected university data. So this is out of 84 universities. For now, I'll just show you the top 10. And the biggest groups came from Aston University, UCL, Manchester, and Sussex. And then there's a long tail across other institutions as well. So the main point here is it's not the exact order of the universities. It's that we're pulling insight from a broad range of students rather than being just dominated by one university. And that's really important because it makes the behaviors we're seeing a lot more reliable across the wider market. Then on the right, you'll see that we've also collected degree information. So this is out of 32 degrees, and these are the top 10 that I'm going to show you here. Of course, business comes out as the largest group. This is the most popular degree to take. So then we have it followed by IT, life sciences, marketing, and economics, and then a varied spread across other different disciplines as well. Again, this shows, you know, we get a real mix of student interest areas. So this is an early indication that your attractions strategies cannot just be one dimensional. Students are coming from different academic backgrounds, different expectations, and have very different motivations as well. So on the left here, then, you'll see the gender representation. So we've got around 58% female and just under 40% male. 1.4% would prefer not to say, and then just a small percentage identifying as other. So this actually mirrors what we are seeing in a lot of university cohorts right now, where female participation has been increasing over several years, which is great to see. And that is actually reflected here. So then we have ethnicity on the right. So 45.6% white students, 27.8% Asian, 13% Black, and then a small proportion mixed. And then in a smaller proportion would prefer not to say, with a few identifying as other. And so this mix matters as well, because, you know, different groups respond to employer messaging and recruitment processes differently. So there are cultural expectations, confidence differences, and visibility factors that influence how and where these students apply. So this does tell us that you're speaking to a very different lived experiences. So diversity aware attraction and diversity messaging, diverse messaging, apologies, could make a real difference in reaching out and building trust as well. So now the final part of this demographic picture is really interesting because it's about access and background. So here you'll see that over 68% of students went to state school, 12% attended an independent school, and around 14% came from a university outside of the UK. So it's important context to understand awareness and networks. Students without existing professional networks often approach job searching differently, and that comes through later in the different personas that we've identified through the data. So then on the right, can see 41% are the first of their family to actually go to university. So that means a significant proportion of students don't have parents or family members that can guide them through the world of early careers. So clarity and practical information becomes really important on how employers communicate to them. So if you're not explaining things clearly, if your process feels intimidating or complicated, these specific types of students do feel it more. So you need clear communication, reassurance. They're not just nice extras, they're access factors that you need to implement. So the takeaway from this entire demographic section is simple. We're dealing with a very diverse mix of students with very different levels of confidence, access, networks, and expectations. So if you as employers don't adapt your language, timing, and your support across all these differences, then a lot of the strong candidates will end up just quietly filtering themselves out. So we're going to cover some of the main findings from the survey, just at a high level, as I mentioned earlier, then a more detailed and in-depth analysis with actual action plans will be in the full report for you. So firstly, we'll look at the four graduate personas that we've identified from this, the results of when and where they search, and the human factor and why human connection is so important at this time. And we will also be diving into exactly what they want from you as an employer and what you can offer them and what you can help them with, as well as we go through the barriers that actually shape their behavior too. So these are some of the top headlines that we found from the survey, and we'll dive in a little bit deeper into each one. Applications are happening a lot earlier than you expect. Expectations from employers are deepening, and the graduate market is shifting in ways that you're just not prepared for. So before we go any further, these are the four behavioral personas that have shaped this year's findings. So to let you know, they're not mutually exclusive, meaning a graduate can move between them depending on their circumstances. So I'll just walk you through each one. So we've got early planners. They make up 44% of the respondents. So these students start applying far earlier than employers expect. They're already browsing roles before many companies have even launched a campaign. So if your recruitment it doesn't start until the new year, you're actually joining the cycle halfway through when the students are looking for in their normal timeline. Then we have late deciders, so a smaller group at 22%, but they're still important. These students are the opposite of the early planners, of course, so they look a little bit later, sometimes in the summer, and they prioritize speed and clarity in their recruitment processes. So they won't commit to a three-stage process in July. So simple routes and quick wins work best for these types of students. We then have experience builders. So this is the largest group that we've actually identified. So they gain confidence from anything that looks like work experience, whether that's, you know, internships, part-time jobs, volunteering, or even projects. So they kind of pile those up throughout the year and through their university career. And it means their applications are often shaped by confidence rather than the ability. So channel seekers as well. So that's at 65%. These are students that rely heavily on certain platforms. So that could be job boards, LinkedIn, or trusted career site. What's interesting is that these employers often prioritize completely different channels to the ones that students are actually using. And that's that creates a huge visibility gap for your company. And so we'll go into more of that later. So if you're just running one campaign in one channel at one time of the year, you're only showing up for about a quarter of the talent pool. So it's really important to be visible all throughout the whole year. So on this slide, it's one of the most practical insights for planning campaigns. So on the left are the channels students rely on most. The biggest are online job boards, LinkedIn, and then company websites. So the interesting thing that that we've found is that the discovery of a job usually starts on the job board, but then the credibility of the company happens later through LinkedIn company sites. So they'll find the job, they'll then look through LinkedIn and your company website to give that credibility. So multiple touch points are needed. It's not just the one touch point on a job board. And then on the right, you can see that a very clear timeline of when they start applying for roles. So September is huge. October, November are pretty strong as well. And then there's a second wave in January. So obviously things calm down over the holiday period. Then when it's the new year, they hit the ground running again with more applications. And then things settle a little bit over the spring. I think that's, you know, during exam season, coursework hand in. And then you see a smaller spike in the summer when the exams are finished. And then they're coming up to when they're coming up to graduation, they really start to ramp up the applications. And those are often driven by those late deciders looking for faster options. So this doesn't mean that they're not prepared or ahead of the game, the students that are applying in the summer. Multiple factors could lead them to be applying later in the year. So it's always best to have your campaigns available to all core cohorts. And we do explore that and why and how to do this in the full report too. And so to get constant coverage, you need campaigns running within these three windows that we would suggest. So we would suggest September to November, then another push in January, and then a quick summer access burst as well. So most employers only run one campaign for this. So it's important to kind of keep this throughout throughout the year. So now we can move on to human interaction. So it tells us quite a reassuring story. We asked them whether they would prefer to attend an in-person assessment center or a virtual assessment center. On the left is last year's results. Please excuse the four just below that. and then on the right is this year's results. So the first thing to notice is that the number of students who strongly agree they prefer in-person assessment centers has actually increased. But more importantly, the neutral category has dropped dramatically. So which means more students have made up their mind and they're really leaning towards that human interaction. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything should be in person now, but what it really tells us is that communication and connection with these students matter. And they associate real human contact with fairness and trust in their application. So the more human your process feels, the more confident students become, and confidence, you know, massively reduces these dropouts. So now this is the priorities ranking from last year and this year. So we've got a good comparison here. You can see it hasn't completely shuffled, but the intensity has changed this year on certain priorities. So salary and benefits are still number one at 72% both years, which is very interesting that they've been the exact same percentage. with that, with the new budget, as I mentioned earlier, the graduates are worse off financially. So salary has become even more of a filter. Students use it as a quick qualifier before they even look at the culture and the progression. So then going down, work-life balance remains high, interesting work, so meaningful work as well, making impact to the business, and progression as well is still important. And then we start to see the newer shifts. So hybrid working has actually dropped slightly, but it's still a high priority. So students are now expecting it rather than seeing it as a perk or a benefit. And the biggest riser this year is job security. So it's a direct reflection of the layoffs, the hiring freezes, and the uncertainty in some early talent-heavy sectors. So while salaries still opens the door, students are increasingly asking, is this going to be stable? Will this last? So it's important that you kind of ease their mind on that. And we, you know, we recommend just showing financial clarity early on, but also communicating that security, the progression, and long-term development in them. There we go. And finally, this slide summarizes what's blocking students the most. So over 60% say they're open to relocation, but far fewer can actually move. So that is the biggest barrier, is cost. So deposits, rent, transport, all of it adds up, and students just simply don't have that extra buffer. So relocation barriers come from a few different areas, but they mainly are linked to diversity. If students can't afford to move, then the employer hiring only in certain cities risk shrinking that accessible talent pool. So if you want to access, every kind of talent, you need the strategies that don't rely on the location or assumed baseline of experience. So all of these charts that we've looked at together tell us that talent isn't disappearing. They're just applying differently earlier and with new pressures shaping their choices. So the challenge isn't finding the talent, it's actually meeting the talent where they are. So with that, all of that information that we can sit on, we'd like to stop for a moment and open the floor to any questions. Then we can move on to what's actually in the full report and what you gain from it as well. Dan, I think there were some pre-submitted ones. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Karima. Yes, there are a few questions from members that we can run through. Feel free to use the chat if you would like to post a question, and we'll do our best to get to that. Okay, I think she's here, Natasha from the Project Box. She asked, have you noticed unusual trends in application numbers?
Yes, really. Yeah, the timing of applications has shifted quite dramatically. What we're seeing is students applying much earlier, as I mentioned. And in fact, the peak is now between that September and December block. So the trend isn't necessarily more applications overall, but a very strong concentration in an earlier cycle and a more selective approach when they're applying as well. So on the other side as well, some companies receive more applications than others, and this is simply down to either the industry that the company is in, but as well as the metrics, as I meant, that I mentioned earlier, not just about having that attractive salary, but having good progression routes, meaningful work, and good work-life balance, which will make your job more attractive, leading to more applications. Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Hopefully that's answered your question, Natasha. Next question from Carla from Lane, Clark and Peacock LLP. How, as an employer, can we get comfortable that our selection process is not negatively impacted by candidates using AI?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We're definitely hearing this from a lot of employers. So the key thing is that graduates actually want that human interaction, and that's the biggest safeguard against AI polished applications. So when the process includes real conversations and practical exercises and personalized interaction, AI becomes a lot less effective, because, you know, candidates are still they still need to demonstrate genuine thinking, that genuine thinking and behavior as well. So designing human touch points into a process is actually the most effective protection. So you can actually monitor how their personality matches their application. So it's a win-win for both sides, really. You know, you get more insight into the type of person they are, and they receive that human interaction that they need as well.
Yeah, that brings me to the next question just posted by Julia Hilton in the chat. They run in-person assessment centres in Oxford for graduates, but it's tricky when other offices across the world. And so the distances are, you know, are huge. He's wondering if you think preference for in-person assessment centres is a global trend.
Well, I mean, what we found in the data is that it's not a must in-person assessment centres, but it is a nice to have if they have the option to come in. What we've kind of found throughout the survey and our findings was that, you know, you need to have a mix of both. If you can, so really, so you can pander to both sides, people that aren't able to get to the location and people that are nearby. So it kind of opens up a lot of more doors and a lot more applications can come through if you offer that as well.
Yeah, it's much more inclusive, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mentioned in the chat that recently Deloitte said they're bringing in-person interviews, final interviews back. So that's interesting to see if any other members might be considering that or are already doing it. I mean, it's pretty important that you do actually get to meet them at some point. Maybe not in the early stage. Yeah, maybe not in the early stages, but depending on what you're trying to assess. And when you throw AI into the mix, it can give a skewed impression of some of your applicants, which might get into the recruitment process and take up a lot of time and money, of course. So, you know, it's thrown a lot of things up in the air. But interesting to see Deloitte, a huge recruiter, deciding to bring final interviews at least in person. Okay, thank you. Next question from Kirsty Townend from the private office. What is the general consensus from grads around hybrid working? What are they expecting?
So around hybrid working, so hybrid working has actually, you know, slipped down a lot in the priority list. So it's not just because students don't want it, though. What's happening is the hybrid option is now assumed. So it's not really a differentiator anymore because graduates actually expect that flexibility as a standard, the same way we'd expect, you know, software or tech equipment. So organizations won't win talent through hybrid work as a perk anymore, but you'll absolutely risk losing the talent by removing that flexibility option. So it is still very important. It hasn't moved down the list, but it's still a big, big factor to have.
Perfect. Thank you. Another question here from Melanie Johnston at Telefonica. Huge international graduate recruiter, wondering if there are any new insights into graduate programs and the best way to attract brightest and the best.
So for employers running graduate roles or graduate programs, the biggest shift is really in the priorities. So as I mentioned, salary is important, but students are weighing in those other factors. Like progression, work-life balance. So the best attraction strategy from what we're seeing is to clarify these progression routes, show them visible development pathways and what the work actually does look like in real time. So graduate roles are with a clear journey outperform those with that only lead with money as a reward. And so it's always important to have those extra factors to attract that talent.
Lovely, thank you. We've had a lot of questions from members about the timing of campaigns, which we showed in that bar chart. You know, obviously the autumn still alive and kicking as a main time to start your campaigns, but not necessarily, you know, that's it. There are other peaks throughout the year. So one member has said, what does the data say about timelines? When should we start hiring? Guess we have covered that. So hopefully that will answer that and others. In the recording, you can go back and have a look at the slides there. But yeah, we've identified three key windows where it would be a good way of optimizing your time. When, you know, a lot of HR teams are stretched, they're juggling lots of other tasks. So I understand why that's very important and why we have a lot of interest in the timing of campaigns. You know, because we have some members who do kind of just-in-time recruitment, you know, very last minute, and they wonder, you know, are they actually able to attract the right kind of people if they can only do it in that kind of process rather than having a more structured timeline. So hopefully we've covered that one. We've got a question here from Laura Pyle. When reviewing where students are searching for jobs, do you capture any data from other social media platforms apart from LinkedIn?
Yes, we do actually have that in the full report. So you can see that at the end of the webinar. We have a full ranking of where they look in detail. Yeah, it's got all the details within the full report for you there.
Perfect. Thank you. Catherine Knox has asked, I don't think we covered it in the methodology. How many students are undergrads? How many are postgrads? Are they subject to visa rules? And are they reflecting on the UK job markets? So there's three questions there, I guess.
Yes. So they are, it's a mixture of undergrads and postgrads. So we've got 84% are actually graduated in 2025. 12% were graduated after 2025. And 3.9% graduated before 2024. So we do have a slight mixture, but the majority are 2025 graduates. In terms of, yeah, so they are reflecting on the UK job market. So they are mainly those with either British citizens or pre-settled, settled statuses with, you know, UK or EU passports. So that's the demographic that we're looking at.
Yeah, so not subject to visa rules.
No.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, for the most part.
Lovely, thank you. Another one from Kirsty, I think. Do you have any reliable salary benchmarking for graduate roles or any recommendations as to sources where we could cross-check? Brilliant question, because we saw from what they're looking for from employers, salary was almost identical to what we reported this time last year. So it's almost table stakes is that you have to have a competitive salary, which is no surprise, but it can differ by region, by job role, by industry sector. We understand that, so perhaps we can answer that question for Kirsty there, Karima, about any reliable salary benchmarking for graduate roles.
So actually in the full report we do cover that. It's not done by region, but it's done by the 1,000 respondents that, and then we can map that through the universities and their degrees. We go through the rankings of what they expect in a salary when they're looking for a graduate job. So we go into lots of detail within that. So when you download the report, then you'll be able to kind of see that and then cross-check that across. Yeah.
Yeah, there are other sources for benchmarking graduate salaries, which we can share with you, Kirsty. Mm-hmm. From Arella Warner, is there any data on the effectiveness of attendance to career fairs hosted at uni? Great one. We all know there are many, many career fairs up and down the country, and for internal recruitment teams, that's a huge draw on resources. And so at the end of these campaigns, it's understandable if companies need to weigh up, you know, is it actually worth that investment? I mean, it's all very well turning up, meeting students in person and the branding opportunity, I guess. But when it comes down to it, for Arella, she's interested in, is there actually any data on the effectiveness? I guess we'd have to define effectiveness. I mean, I'm assuming it's a conversion from going to a fair, signing up X number and then actually hiring X number. But was this covered in our survey in any way?
We hadn't covered that specific type of question, but it was a really interesting one to think about for next year. Definitely, it'd be good to know. But you know, we as the GRB group, we do attend these universities as well, and we have these conversations directly face to face with students. So we are also there on the floor with these students face to face, answering their questions, their concerns and whatnot. I'd be interested to know the attendance for other companies that aren't agencies, for example, to attend a career fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Noted. That's a good suggestion. Thank you, Arella. Sorry we can't answer it, but we will certainly consider that for the next survey. Jeff, I know Jeff's an international recruiter, so he has asked, have we pulled any data on graduate programs running outside the UK, such as eBay, JD.com and Adidas, who are running big programs in Germany across the EU? I mean, I know for a fact these were UK grads, right?
Yes. Yeah. These were UK grads. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the candidates were taken from the GLB talent pool, which is mainly UK domiciled graduates, but certainly an opportunity there to run an international campaign. The comparison would be quite interesting. I know in Germany, for a fact, it's very, very different. So maybe a conversation we can have with Jeff about the international and other members, if they're interested in seeing results on that. Perhaps we can partner up with other organisations that we know that have a good spread of EU grads. Julia, you've responded there to Arella's question, who was talking about the effectiveness of career fairs. You find a significant proportion of offer holders met us at a careers fair in person, right? And GradCracker scored highly for them, much less so LinkedIn. So yeah, in the report, we talk about job boards, social media, and other ways that graduates come in contact with employers. So yeah, we've covered that one there. We've got a few more questions we'd like to run through from members who responded earlier. If salary is still number one, what's changed? Was one question that came through.
Yes, so salary remains the top priority, of course, as we've been speaking about. But it's not really the deciding factor anymore. So in your advertised roles, we would suggest, you know, to include any progression routes and, you know, work-life balance, like I suggested. And, you know, we in the report, we break down the shift in the rankings and how the graduates weigh these factors together. But, you know, we should really emphasize other things aside from the salary. You know, they look at the salary and then they then qualify you through the other means, like the work-life balance, flexible working, all of that kind of stuff. And you know, just meaningful work that really makes an impact to your business and your industry. And it just shows that you're a future focused employer as well, that you're going to invest in them, not just a job. So yeah, that's a really important factor.
Cool. Thank you, Karima. We've got a question here that's referring to our ability now, because this is our second survey that we've run, we can actually do comparisons the first time, which is really interesting, so we can start tracking trends from here on in. So one of our members says, is the data comparable to last year's research?
We have asked the same questions as last year, so yeah, we can really look at those different trends. We have added a few extra questions in there, which we can't compare to last year. However, we will just keep implementing these and adding more throughout the years as well. So it's really nice to see be able to see that trend year on year and be able to kind of map out how it's changed over the years. So yeah, it's going to be really good that we're going to be able to keep going and keep seeing these trends too.
Okay. Another question here on how we determine the graduate personas. How did we determine those graduate personas, Karima?
Yeah, so we looked at, you know, when they're applying, how they're applying, what kind of channels they use. And a lot of them, we give them an option of to choose what channels that they use to apply or to kind of qualify an employer. And there wasn't a maximum of choices that you could make. So we could identify those channel seekers, for example, that have chosen a lot of different channels and have a wide variety, or the experience builders that decided to really focus on only their work experience throughout university. And then there were others that, you know, that weren't able to get work experience during that during that university career. So all of these different factors, all of these different questions that we've asked, we put them all together and kind of mapped out who they are and where they go. But like I said, they're not mutually exclusive. So they do move between each one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's kind of how we determined all of them.
Lovely. Thank you. One other question here. What was the biggest barrier students reported? I guess this is touching on social mobility, and we were talking before about the demographic and how that plays a factor in some of the responses we've had. So, what came out from the report, the biggest barrier?
Yeah, the biggest barrier. I mean, so I would probably say it's the relocation costs mm-hmm. is a big barrier. So sometimes if you're able to, you should have that relocation package if you can to really help them move over. We also had, you know, students that are the first to go to the university.
Yeah,
those ones, you know, they might not have had that support at home to really help them get that foot in the door. They might not have the connections. Mm. They might not know when to apply because no one in their family was able to go to university. So they don't know those timelines. They don't know the best routes to get in. So I think that is another barrier. But I think it's important for you as an employer to have that, to give them that support and to help them understand those timelines.
Yeah. We noticed some members who actually have communication strategy with actual parents themselves because they're, you know, influential and very, very keen for their son or daughter to transition into the workplace. So sometimes that's overlooked, but, you know, having a plan to involve parents can be very productive, particularly for those who have never been to university before. It's nice to see that actually in the report that there are a large number that the very first of their generation to go to uni. It's really good. We've got a question from Natasha. Can you clarify your metric on the when they started applying, Ralph? What does the 250 refer to? You want to go back to that slide, maybe?
Yeah. So this is overall. So this is out of 1,000 respondents, and they've gone through each month. We basically asked them when they started applying this year. The majority said they started immediately as soon as they came back from summer in September, and then it kind of trails off all the way into the holidays and then peaks again in January. So that's it's all together, all of those 1,000 respondents, they had the one answer of when they started applying.
Yeah. And also just to add, you know, some of these very strong candidates are also accepting more than one job offer, which we are going to add that question in for our next survey.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, having reneged offers can be very frustrating for employers. So, we're going to actually add that in. How many offers did they actually accept?
And just an important note as well, if you do keep your applications open in the spring, summertime for those later deciders, the students that applied early and might have had a job offer, they're still looking around. They're still there. So it is always really important to still keep that those applications open later in the year, because you might not have been seen by those early appliers, and they might just jump in at the last minute once they see your job as well. So it's important to keep it open.
Yeah, perfect. Hopefully that's explained that slide there for you, Natasha, and others. One more question here. If you could recommend one change for employers, what would it be?
I would say the human interaction is really, really important. As I mentioned earlier, you know, you want to understand the graduate as well. They might have used AI in their applications. It kind of eliminates that issue. So that's a benefit for yourself. But also they're getting exhausted from, you know, AI reviews and being rejected by AI. It's a lot better having that human touch and a lot more beneficial to do that for both parties. So I would say keep that human interaction and make sure that, you know, you actually speak to them, whether, you know, it's just on the phone or on video call, anything like that during an interview. It's just nice to have that
Cool. We know that we're employers, certainly large employers, are facing, you know, record numbers of applications, and maybe they be a bit blasé about the candidate experience being as important. But things will start to change at some point. And it's just good practice, I suppose, to consider the whole recruitment process and how they are handled. And a lot of recruitment teams are becoming rejection handling managers, we understand, and giving them a soft landing, helping them on their career journey can do so much, not just for your brand, but for those individuals as well. And there are technical solutions for that, but there also are, you know, things that have that human touch, which makes such a difference and really will make you stand out. We have no other questions at the moment, but there's still time. If you wish, put them in the chat. We'll do our best to answer those. But I'm going to let Karima carry on with the last couple of slides.
So, yeah, thank you so much for all the questions. It's been really great. So, you know, I'm glad that you're all intrigued by the data and how you can update your recruitment processes with that. So it's all very useful. But with that, let's just go into what is actually in the full report. We not only dive even deeper into the subjects that we've spoken about today, but we also do reflect on why it's important for your strategies. So you'll find the persona breakdowns fully deep dived into application timing patterns, specific channel preferences, salary expectations as well, relocation blockers too, communication preferences, and then right at the end, a full employer playbook that you can match your strategies with. So as I mentioned in the beginning, we do visit around 40 university career fairs each year. So we have added a little bonus just at the bottom that you won't find anywhere else. It's direct quotes, vox pops from students that we actually met at the university fresher fairs or career fairs, and we made a note of them. So those are very interesting insights that back up our research, but also there are some anomalies in there that you might not expect. So it's an interesting read. And this report is designed to help you make decisions. You know, it's not just for you to read statistics. They're real helps. So we do have a special offer on that now ties in the full report in with a long list of other benefits all year round as a GRN VIP member. So we've got the full Spark report 2025, unlocked restricted content, invitation to all Fresh Insights webinars, access to our podcast, live chat, private LinkedIn groups, on-demand webinar archive, and even access to our WhatsApp group as well, which is very active. We've also got invitations to our quarterly peer circles and job alerts for early talent roles, two tickets for our monthly Meet the Members events in London, exclusive offers on services with the GRB group, fast-tracked application to join Graduate Mentor, our social enterprise, onboarding and welcome drinks at Homegrown Private Members Club in London. So you've got a big, long list of benefits that you can get with a £40 discount as well. So it's £200. And this is for a full year too. This isn't just a one-off. So to get the benefits and to get the report, you can either scan that QR code or you can visit graduaterecruitersnetwork.co.uk and log in from there and get the membership from there. Okay. And then lastly, just so everyone is aware of the different divisions that the GRB group have, we've been around for around 30 years now and have expanded into all the life cycles of the student. So firstly, I'll start with GRN right in the middle there. Of course, you all know it's our client-facing community. I'm sure you're all aware of it. And then we've got GRB, which is our talent pool that comes from, you know, with dedicated consultants working hard to match them, these students with the best jobs. And then we have Metrica, which is similar, but for IT and data graduates who have left uni a while back, but have gained a bit of experience since. Then we have Early Talent Academy, which is our apprentice division. And finally, our Social Enterprise Graduate Mentor, which is our free online mentoring program where we help underrepresented students. So each of them supports a different part of the early talent journey, from attraction data to ongoing career support and mentoring. And so wherever your organization sits within these early talent plans, there's support across the full student life cycle from us. And with that, I'd just like to thank everyone who attended. I hope it's been really insightful, and we hope to see you as a VIP member soon. And yeah, thank you all so much for all your questions.
Lovely. Thank you, Karima, and for putting all that time and effort in from February to October, getting those responses, putting the report together, and also other members of the team here who've been involved. If you do want to contact me, there's my email, there's Karima's email. More than happy to run any follow-up discussions with you. This recording will be sent to you within 48 hours. You just need to log in with your Discovery account details or register, and it takes a couple of minutes, and then you'll get access to the recording. That's it. Have a great day, and thank you for spending your time with us today.